This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Tom Withers joins us. Hello, Thomas.
What's happening, man?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're okay. Can you set the record straight? You retired from the Associated Press, but you're working with the Associated Press and other entities. Retirement not for Tom Withers.
True. I retired as a staff member from the AP.
Yeah.
But I'm still freelancing for the AP and some other media outlets. So I'm still staying in the sports realm for the time being. My understanding is they have found a replacement for me who will be coming in apparently next month. Or are we? Yeah, March. And so we'll go from there. But I'm going to continue to do some sports in the area. You know, as I've talked to you guys about before, the semi-quasi-retirement came sooner than I expected. And so I still want to keep working and functioning and doing my thing, so to speak.
And that is wonderful news for us and for readers.
Thank you.
And
thank
listeners.
You.
That's nice of
you. So I'm right, Tom. So I put down on our rundown to best describe you, I called you Associated Press Emeritus. And I think that's the best way to put it.
Maybe a little overstated, but I'll take it from you, Dan Manningham.
I think AP Emeritus. I think that should be your official title. We'll get the business cards. We'll get you one of those
sounds
cool
good.
Plaques you can put on your desk.
That's wonderful.
Let's do it.
We kicked around the first hour of the show, okay? Cavs have been dominant. They've looked phenomenal so far this season. But are they the team to beat in the Eastern Conference? And I said no. I think it's still the Celtics, but I think the Cavs are in the conversation as teams that can get out of the East along with the Knicks and maybe the Milwaukee Bucks. Where do you kind of have them slotted, Tom? And what do you think of their chances when they get to the playoffs?
Well, let me say this. I've missed watching the Cavs over the last week and a half, right? And in this weather seems to have gotten worse during this All-Star break. So it'll be nice to see them back on the floor tonight. I'm with you, Jeff. I still think that, you know, until the Celtics are unseated, if they are, that is still the team to beat. I think, you know, the recent matchup that we saw here in Cleveland between the two teams, I really think underscored that, in my mind, the Celtics are still a notch better than the Cavs. And that's because they have all that experience. And it's because they have those two great wing players, which is why the Cavs have made some of the moves they have made to try to combat that. And I think when we watched this Celtics team with Porzingis as a very different team, you saw the mismatches they were able to create with, you know, forcing the Cavs to make some defensive switches that they probably won't make the next time they play them. And they'll have a little bit of a different game plan. And I was a little surprised in that game in particular that Kenny Atkinson didn't use a zone a little more than he maybe could have. So, yeah, I still think the Celtics are a notch better than the Cavs. That is taking nothing away from the Cavs in this remarkable start in what has been, you know, arguably as good a regular season as we've ever had in Cleveland.
Do you think the DeAndre Hunter trade brings them closer together when it comes to the hierarchy of the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, that's to be determined, Dan. But I think that's what the move was ideally made for, right? And, you know, and I've said that from from day one with this team. You know, until you find a way to defend Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown in the playoffs, then you've got your hands full. And so I think that's what Hunter does. Obviously, he gives them some depth at the wing. You know, we've talked about this this Green signing that should happen probably within the next day or two, which gives the Cavs even more depth at the wing. You know, the trade of LeVert and Yang was done for that reason, right? You gave up two really good rotational players and some culture guys. And, you know, Nick, I know you guys have been talking about this in the last few minutes here with the news on Wembanyama. Listen, it's all about health, isn't it? And as we look forward to these last couple months of the season, that's paramount. It's who's healthy, who's playing well, who's connected, and who's as healthy as anybody else going into the playoffs, because all these teams are capable of, you know, listen, you look at the East and you look at all the injuries that some of the top teams have had already, you know, in the first half here. You take a team like Philadelphia, which we all expected to be amongst the top four, and they're not, and that's because of injuries. You look at a team like, you know, Indiana that's dealt with some health issues. They're finally getting themselves together. And you look at what happened to the Cavs last year in the playoffs with, you know, Jared Allen going down and missing the entire Boston series, and Donovan Mitchell, you know, playing at probably 80% of what he is. So it's all about, you know, health. And I think these next couple of weeks, you're going to see teams kind of like easing back, I think, you know, into the stretch run here. But hey, it's exciting. I think we all hoped and had high expectations for this Cavs team, and they have exceeded them and given us a new bar to shoot for.
And Tom, the way they've played and the way they've done it has left. Yeah, yeah, it's been so much fun to watch. It's left you looking for things. Well, if this happens, blah blah blah. And we were chatting earlier. Okay, will they tighten the rotation here and maybe try and get some of these guys more playoff ready with minutes? Donovan Mitchell floating something like that out there, and Dan mentioned that, and I said okay. Except they've played 9-10 guys all year, and it's worked so beautifully. Why would you even mess with that to get playoff ready? And could that put more stress? So that. Man, if I'm Kenny Atkinson, I think I'm just going to keep rolling with what's worked and take that into the playoffs too, Tom.
I agree with you 100%, Jeff, and I think that's why you see these guys as fresh as they have been, right? When you look at if you want to go team by team in the East, you can do it pretty easily and just look at, you know, the minutes averaged, you know, for the starting lineups for the top teams in the East, and the Cavs are below where everybody else is at, right? They got guys that are averaging, you know, roughly – you know, their starters averaging roughly 30 minutes a game, where then you look at a team like the Knicks, where you got, you know,
35.
Yeah, you know, Jalen Brunson barely comes off the floor, and neither does Josh Hart, and that's going to have a cumulative effect. So, and I think you're right. It's a great problem to have, and I think Kenny Atkinson, Jeff, would be the first to say that. It's a great problem to have when you look down your bench and go, man, I can play that guy and that guy and that guy, and we're still good. And so, listen, it's going to be able to allow them to, again, you know, stay as healthy as possible down the stretch, and then it'll be up to Kenny to be able to tighten the rotation as he sees fit. But I mean, having a kid like Sam Merrill at your disposal that can come off the bench and you know, get hot at the right time for you, what a valuable, you know, commodity to have. So they're in a great place. I think I'm glad people have really, you know, embraced this team, and to your point before, Jeff, their style of play, you know, where there's been a lot of criticism about the way the NBA looks now and too many threes. Well, I got news for you. You know, the way the Cavs share the ball before they fire up those threes has been something to behold, and they are one of the few teams, especially in the Eastern Conference, that can kind of kill you both ways, right? They can pound you inside if they need to, and they can also hurt you on the perimeter.
Tom Withers, Associated Press Emeritus, joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I love the way that you brought that up, because it I think you're 100% right with this Cavs team and the fact that they can not only play the beautiful game, but then can also run high screen and roll and all that stuff. It always brings me back to the old Bill Belichick phrase of, my goal is to come into a game and make you play left-handed. And can you play left-handed? And I think this Cavaliers team can, but the only thing that's going on is you see these rumblings every so often throughout the league about, and I hate the usage of this term, but calling this Cavaliers team like a little softer, that they don't want to be as physical, that they want to be more finesse. Do you see that as being the case?
No, not necessarily. I think there's a toughness. I think there's a mental toughness about this Cavs team that I like, and I think they've got enough of an edge where, and I know what you're talking about, Dan, and as you know, And Jeff, you've seen this game as long as I have in terms of how the playoffs are just a different sport, right? It becomes more physical. You've got to be able to bang with teams, which is why I think it's important for them to get guys like Isaac Okoro and Dean Wade healthy. You're going to need those bodies down the stretch. But yeah, I think the great thing about this Cavs team, Dan, is what you just mentioned before, is that they can play the finesse game. They can get up and down the floor and run with you. And if they have to bang, they can do that as well. It's just that I worry, though, about, you know, when you start to have to play that kind of a style, that's when injuries can happen. And, you know, Jared Allen has been, knock on wood, you know, healthy for the most part this year. That's when he gets into trouble, when he has to start to play that kind of game with teams like the Knicks and the Hawks and the Pistons and the Magic, which is another team, oh, by the way, that's been ravaged by injuries that is starting to get itself back together again a little bit. So, yeah, I like the fact that they can do all of that, and I think that's a real credit to Kenny and to Kobe Altman for constructing this team in the fashion that they are right now.
Tom Withers joining us from the Associated Press and other media entities as well. So that's nice to say. Let's go to Goodyear, Arizona. I don't think anybody thought, okay, Terry Francona's gone, new manager, he's never managed before. He just barely, and they had the year they had last year. I don't know that anybody's looking at this team this year and thinking they can repeat that, Tom, which makes me think they can.
Exactly right.
You know, what's your thought on a team that didn't make significant moves to get better, and in fact, you can question whether they made moves that they're not going to be as good, yet they always seem to win and figure out a way to compete.
That's exactly it. I mean, who are we to question anything that they do, right? I mean, they've been as consistent a team as we've seen in this town over the last, you know, 30 plus years. They're always in the hunt, and that's you know, a tip of the cap to Chris Antonetti and to Mike Chernoff and their player personnel and development people. And then to your point, to the managers they've been able to bring in here. I think, you know, I'll be honest with you, and I almost feel guilty for it. I almost feel like I underreported what was arguably one of the best baseball seasons I've ever seen last year. And to consider how far they went with the expectations. Now, listen, I thought they were a mid-80s team. I think I actually had them out like at 87 wins, which people thought I was crazy for saying, but I liked the lineup. I liked the pitching, not knowing that they would lose Shane Bieber after two starts. But I liked the makeup of the team. And when I talked to people that were around them, they just felt like a very connected bunch. And we saw that, right? Much like with this Cavs team that we're seeing this year. That Guardians team last year was super connected. And it's going to be tough to replace guys like Josh Naylor and Andrés Giménez, who is, you know, arguably the best second baseman in baseball defensively. So, you know, when you tear apart at least the right side of your infield, there's always concern. But I think, bringing in a guy like Carlos Santana, who, you know, fits in on so many levels, and if he's got anything left in that bat that he can give you, that would be great. And defensively, I think he's an upgrade on Josh, obviously. And then, you know, you've got some young guys that we saw little glimpses of last year that you're hoping for bigger things out of this year. You know, Marzano and Big Christmas and right on down the line. I mean, when you think about the number of guys that they brought in here last year, and then not only did they brought them in here, but then they contributed at a high level right into the playoffs. I mean, Daniel Schneeman, who did we, you know, nobody saw that guy coming, and he was very productive for them. So I'm with you, Jeff. It's like, you know, the moment you decide that this team's no good, they come back and surprise you. And I would not, you know, I think that, you know, obviously the AL Central is going to be very, very difficult this year with some of the changes that have taken place in Detroit and in Kansas City. So it's going to be rough, and Minnesota's sitting there as well. So it's just nice to think about baseball for a second as I look out the window at the garage buried under 4 feet of snow, it feels like.
Agreed, and it's a situation that will be taken care of when I get home on my end, too, and I really don't want to because I've had enough. What do you make of the John Means signing, and do you like it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, this is what they've done, right? This was the Matthew Boyd signing of last year, right? Take a guy that's a low-risk, high-reward kind of move and, you know, potentially somebody that could give you a real boost towards the second half of the season, depending on, you know, he pitched really well a couple of years ago for a really bad Baltimore team. I mean, that was a team, I think, that only won 54 games that season. And, you know, he made the All-Star team. And, you know, the Guardians have done a great job at finding these reclamation projects over the last couple of years. So much like, you know, Jeff's point before, I'm not going to doubt it. You know, it's worked before. Why can't it do it again?
Tom Withers joining us. Tom, you talked about Kyle Manzardo, John Kenzie Noel. I'd love to see somebody bust out and become a position player who can, you know, you can count on for 20 homers or 85 runs batted in, something like that. Is there a guy on this team that you think might be that guy? Is it Noel? Is it Manzardo? Could it be Juan Brito at second base?
Could be any of those three. It could be DeLauder. Could be, I think Bizana is going to end up being up here, you guys, much earlier than any of us expected. And I think that maybe have been, you know, one of the driving forces on the Jimenez trade is that this kid appeared to be, from all intents and purposes. Now, listen, it's a big jump to go from double A ball to playing at this level. We've seen that numerous times of guys coming up before they're ready and then having to, you know, accept some failure and go back down and then come back again. But from all the people that I've talked to, they said this kid is really, he's very different. And as the number one overall pick, you would expect him to be so, right? He's played a lot of baseball. And I think that could be a guy that even by the second half of the season, I think could be a contributor in this lineup.
That's interesting.
All right, Jeff, Tom, I'm throwing this out to both of you. Has the ship sailed on Bo Naylor's bat? Or do we still think that there's something left in there that he could tap into?
Tom, you first.
I think he's a good enough hitter, guys, like especially with the way he can kind of stay inside the ball and go to the opposite field. That I think there is another level there. Now, I don't know if we're going to see the power numbers maybe that that people would like to see out of that position. I'll be honest with you guys. The game has changed to the point where whatever you can get production-wise, and listen, you can't have somebody batting 167 in that catching spot. But if he could be a 240, 250 hitter, continue to learn about, you know, catching pitchers and, you know, keeping this pitching staff organized, et cetera, that's such a vital role on this team. I think he's fine. So I will say yes. I think there's another level there for Bo Naylor.
I think so, too. I think you're at least a year away from saying that Bo's not going to help you offensively. And the fact that he showed a little bit of pop, I think that might be something they can work with and build on. I sure hope so, because catcher is not a position where, well, this organization seems to be overflowing with talent right now.
Or any organization.
No, yeah.
Right. No, to say the least, yeah. And again, you can't have those automatic outs in the 8-9 spot or whatever it can be. So, I still believe in the kid. I like the fact that he's a hard worker. I think it's going to be interesting to see that now that he's not with his brother, maybe how things change for him and or for both of them. So we'll see. But I'm still buying the Bo Naylor stock.
Thomas, thanks for your time. We appreciate it. We'll keep reading.
Thank you, buddy. Stretch before shoveling. Don't pull anything in this.
Thanks, guys. Stay warm. See you soon.
Tom Withers, Associated Press and other media entities, joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I'm Jeff Phelps. Andy's out today. Dan Menigan doing everything. His job and Andy's. Doing it well. Thank you very much.
That's not well. Mediocre.
Doing a mediocre job of Andy's job and his own.
Now you're cooking.
Actually, everything dropping down a little bit because he's being spread so thin.
Now you're cooking with gas. Like the way you operate.
Tom Withers was just with us, and we talked extensively about the Cavs there. And then we were talking a little Guardians and asked about guys who might pop this year. And I was really glad to hear Tom mention Chase DeLauder, who, you know, my dream scenario is he is so good in spring training that he just wins the right field job, gets about 450 to 500 at-bats out there. I think I'm hallucinating, by the way.
I would love for that to be the case.
Yeah, I think I'm hallucinating.
I really would love for him to do that. The problem is that this organization has had a platoon in right field since
the late 20s, wasn't it? And I don't mean the 2020s.
I think it was Moses Cleveland. Moses may have platooned with somebody else.
Once Elmer Flick was done, they decided, well, we better platoon.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty much the way that it went. That's what it's felt like. That has been a platoon since Manny Ramirez.
But then Tom took it in a different direction and gave us something to think about just a little bit there, didn't he, Dano?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, I thought Dan was ready to hit this button and said he's hitting other buttons.
Yes, sir.
This guy's doing everything.
I think Bazana is going to end up being up here, you guys, much earlier than any of us expected. And I think that maybe have been, you know, one of the driving forces on the Jimenez trade is that this kid appeared to be, from all intents and purposes. Now, listen, it's a big jump to go from double-A ball to, you know, to playing at this level. We've seen that numerous times of guys coming up before they're ready and then having to, you know, accept some failure and go back down and then come back again. But from all the people that I've talked to, they said this kid is really, he's very different.
Tom Withers saying that Travis Bazana might be up here sooner rather than later and maybe even being impactful this season. So with that thought in mind.
Baskin and Phelps present The Race.
What is the fella's name on second base?
I don't know.
For second base.
Do we have to add Travis Bazana to the race for second base?
I don't know, man.
We had him out.
Yeah, we didn't think that was the case. No pun intended.
He's not going to start the season on the Major League team, right? I'm not gonna hallucinate on that one. That's not happening. They're gonna start him in double A, right? It's gonna be down playing at Canal Park.
Right. I'm not gonna lie to you, I think that's what they will do.
I do too.
Because this team has been patient with prospects for as long as we can remember. They give these guys so much runway. And they make sure they're really doing well and on a hot streak more than anything else before they find their way into the major league roster. Now, the question that I have is the old Terry Francona question, where they would always talk about how there's certain guys that they would like try to hide from Tito because he would come in and be like, I want that dude. I want
that
dude.
I like that guy. Yeah, go get him.
Yeah, go get him. I want him now. He's good. He's good. He's good. He's good. He's good. And I wonder if they do that with Bazana. Do you think they do that with Bazana?
College players in this day and age have a shorter jump, I think, to Major League Baseball. Not all, but some. You know, the guys who are at the top of the college game can get to the majors pretty quickly. Everything we hear about him is that he's the kind of guy who can do that. I don't expect him to be here anytime soon. In fact, I'd be surprised if he's here before July. If he is, I'd think, wow, that was fast. You know, that's less than a year, right?
Absolutely.
From getting drafted to getting to the majors, that's really cooking. But we've seen that before. You know, some guys can pull that off. I just have a hard time believing that that's going to happen. I would think, however, that he has a real good opportunity to be the starting second baseman in 2026.
Yes,
I would think he has a really good chance of that.
It's going to take one of these other guys in the race for second base to grab that thing with both arms and scream, this is my spot.
Yeah.
It's going to take what you want Chase DeLauter to do for right field. Like, grab it with both hands, be awesome to stop this from happening.
See, here's the other thought on this. Let's just say, and in our race for second base, and we're going to be keeping tabs on that position because it's really intriguing because you know who's going to be the starter. At least by 2027, if not by 2026, Travis Bazana. That's why you drafted him. He's going to be your starter at second base. Who steps up? Right now, the last rankings, I think we had Juan Brito was on top, Gabe Arias was second, Angel Martinez was third, Tyler Freeman, Daniel Schneeman. What happens if, I've used the word hallucinate a lot this hour. I'm going to do it again.
I think it's having me around.
What happens if Juan Brito steps in and looks like he did in Columbus last year? Where he hits about 250, 255, 260, hits about 20 bombs and drives in 80. What happens? You trading him? You turning him into an outfielder? He played a very little bit of outfield last year, but he's supposedly a second baseman.
I give you a dark rebuttal that I don't think I want to say out loud.
He can also play third.
What happens with Brian Rocchio? Because if Rocchio comes
out... But Brito's not considered a shortstop.
But if Rocchio comes out and has a season like he had last year, where he
and not in the playoffs,
pretty good defensively.
And didn't hit very well.
But kind of crummy with the stick in his hands.
But he hit pretty well late in the season and into the playoffs. Was clutch.
And I am a Rocchio fan.
Yeah, I know you are.
I will wave my Brian Rocchio flag until the very, very end. Because I think the guy can play. But if he has an ugly season, I wonder if Brito moves to shortstop and Bezzana takes second base.
Brito's,
I wonder if that's the direction they go.
Brito is not considered a shortstop.
Jeff,
doesn't mean he can't go play it, but you have so many guys who can play middle infield who are top prospects in this organization.
This spring training report brought to you by Mr. Hero and Quinn Legal Associates. I've used this excuse more times than I can count. I feel like this is turning into the Harold Baines excuse for Hall of Famers. I moved Tyler Freeman to center field and it worked. And so there's a part of me that kind of wants to throw my hands in the air.
But it is shortstop.
That kind of wants to throw my hands in the air and go, we can't take Juan Brito and move him to shortstop and make it work.
In his minor league career, Brito has played 44 games at shortstop. He's played 286 games at second base. That mean anything? He's played 54 games at third base. He's played a little bit at first base. He's played a little bit in the outfield. Shortstop has been his third position. I don't know that I want some guy whose third position is shortstop being my starting shortstop. And I'm not moving Jose Ramirez there.
I agree completely. But once again, you're in the midst of the logjam. And it's unless you're going to look at me and go, well, maybe Ron Brito can play center field. Or maybe, I mean, what, Chase DeLauder, they always said, maybe could play a little center field. But it feels like it's one of those where it's kind of like how, and I know nobody pays attention to any other team besides their own.
Field.
But I hope it's not like the Brian, I had his name and lost it. Center fielder for the Pittsburgh Pirates, who's really good. Brian Reynolds. Where he probably should be playing a corner outfield spot, but there's nobody better, so they put him in center field. I wonder if that's Chase DeLauder.
It might be.
Maybe he finds his way there with Lane Thomas.
Kevin's in beautiful Cuyahoga Falls. Kevin?
Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Well,
outside of the pile of white stuff outside that needs to go away.
Oh, my God. Let me get you a cry towel for that one. Seriously.
I'll get over it one day. I'll get over it. It's just going to take me a while.
Yeah. Put your big boy pants on. Let's go. Come on.
I have to go buy them because I don't have snow pants. I'm too old.
Make sure they have lining in them, by the way, so that way you're nice and warm. Hey, my thing on baseball is, you know, I hear all the time our fellow friends in Northeast Ohio just, you know, complaining consistently and continuously about the Cleveland baseball and the salary level, right? And so I guess I'll throw something at you guys. First of all, you know, depending on who you look at, the Cleveland's going to be around the 83, 84 million mark, right? By the way, there's six teams below us in salary. We're not the bottom, including the White Sox, by the way. And if you look within our division, you got KC at around 115 million, and then Detroit and Minnesota around the 130 million mark, right? So really, if you say relative to the teams in our division, we're not drastically below anybody in our division. But then the stark reality of baseball is you look at the top, let's say, 14, 15 teams, depending on how you look at the math, they're basically $200 million plus, right, in salary. So you're talking at least double the salary we have, and in some cases triple, like with the Mets, the Dodgers, Phillies, and the Yankees, all at around $300-plus million. So I guess I throw to you guys, first of all, does this not scream we have the haves and have-nots? You know, in baseball at this point. And secondarily, how do you realistically put a team together in a mid-market city that you can say you're really competitive? And I don't mean just make the playoffs. I'm talking you're a World Series, serious contending team, not named New York, L.A., Philly, or Boston, right? I mean, or Houston and Texas. I mean, really, they're so far ahead of us in salary. Anybody they put their eye on, we can't compete with that. I mean, they can offer them money that would basically be our entire salary for our team, which is ridiculous at a mid-market level to even do that. So I guess, obviously, I love Cleveland baseball. I love summertime, sitting with my boys, watching baseball. It's one of the greatest days you can have in the summer. But, man, how do we compete against these big guys with the salary they have? It just almost seems you can't. I don't know how you get over it. You guys tell me, how can we realistically compete with a salary we know we have to be at?
Kevin, thank you very much. We will tell you when we come back right here on Baskin and Phelps.